Hello, I'm Dr. Rosari Griffin, and this is an interview with Mark Kernan, who teaches part-time on the UCC Diploma on Human Rights and Climate Change. And tonight we are going to discuss climate emergency. Hello, Mark. You're very welcome to the show.
Hello there, Rosari. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, so you teach on a very interesting diploma in UCC. Tell us about it.
Well, it's about climate change or the climate emergency, which I suppose is what we should really call it now, because we're going into a critical phase, really.
Right.
And it's a diploma, which is part of a human rights and development diploma. And I teach on the climate change module part of it. I also teach and lecture on climate change in the part-time on the full-time degree, as I think I was telling you earlier on.
Yes. And tell us, Mark, how does climate change or even climate emergency impact on human rights or vice versa, as the case may be?
That's a good question. I think it impacts, firstly, on the human rights of people who live in other parts of the world in developing countries more, because the more greenhouse gases that we emit, which comes from our cars and our buildings and in the flights we take across the world, the more it impacts on people on the other side of the world because they're less able to deal with it. So first I thought I would actually just, it's a bit technical, but maybe you might agree with this, that maybe just quickly describe what greenhouse gases are.
Because absolutely. No, that's of interest.
You know, not everybody kind of
relates
that,
to
you
it.
Know,
yeah.
Or whatever. But greenhouse gases, basically, we're basically talking about carbon dioxide and methane in particular. And both of those are greenhouse gases. And what they do is when they go into the Earth's atmosphere, they absorb the heat and it kind of acts like a blanket. And we emit those through our fossil fuels.
Right.
Fossil fuels in our cars, our petrol, etc. And there's many different impacts and consequences of that. One of them, which is perhaps a bit less well known, but maybe should be, is that what happens is global warming. And that basically is very simple. If you think of the atmosphere above us, it's like a warm blanket as we emit these fossil fuels, and it gets warmer and warmer and warmer, and it has been getting every year. So nine of the warmest years ever recorded have all been recorded in the last 10 years, which is an extraordinary way to statistic when you think about it, you know. So it increases both extremes of the Earth's water cycle, which is something people don't always understand. So more heat waves and droughts because of warm atmosphere, and then warmer atmosphere holds more water vapor, so more extreme rainfall at the same time. So I know that sounds all very technical, but it's actually quite simple, you know.
Well, I think people are beginning to understand it more because they see more of it around the world in terms of flash flooding.
We're seeing our own country more and more.
Indeed.
Yeah.
And so what would you be advocating then in relation to, I suppose, the curbing of greenhouse gases and the emissions?
Well, it's simple. I was going to say it's very simple. It's very simple to say, but difficult to actually achieve. And that, what we have to do, fossil fuels really, or industrial civilization in many ways, and the material world which we have, which is one we're very comfortable with here in the first world, is based on fossil fuels, oil, gas, peat hydrocarbon fuels, for example. And that's the problem. It's causing pollution. And it's not only is it a global problem, but as we just said there, it's a problem for us here as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we saw Storm Ophelia there a few years ago. And I think one of the things, it's very difficult to pinpoint an actual cause for Storm Ophelia, but we know as the oceans get warmer, 93% of all the carbon that we emit goes up to the atmosphere, hits the atmosphere, goes back down, and ends up in the oceans. And that what that does is it makes the oceans warmer, and it causes just above the ocean to get warmer, and then we have more storms, more typhoons, more hurricanes, and it's a kind of a slow a burning thing. But what we should do is we need to take carbon out of our industry, and that means, for example, which is not always very easy, but one small thing, which, well, not so small, but one thing we do is take petrol and diesel completely out of cars.
Right.
And all transport for that matter, lorries, tractors.
Is that possible or feasible, Mark? I mean, obviously it's ideal, and that would be the ideal, but is it possible or feasible?
It's feasible, all right, but it would take a massive subsidies to actually do it, and that's one of the problems with the courses I teach on Austin, incorporates a bit of the politics of it, because the politics is so important.
And how about green energies, you know, green and efficient energies like electricity, albeit I know it's used often, you know, falls back on fossil fuels to a certain extent, but still, and other wind energy and wave energy and all of that. Are we harvesting those to any effect to, you know, create a part of the national grid or to accelerate?
It's happening very slowly, but I think our problem at the moment is that it now has to happen very quickly. We've known about climate change, global warming, because it's kind of both interchangeable concepts, really, since at least the 1950s, and it's been known for sure since the late 1980s.
Mm-hmm.
Yet since about 1992, which was the first year there was a global conference on climate change and the environment generally, our carbon dioxide emissions have gone up by 62%, would you believe? So this kind of what it kind of tells me is that we really need like a Green New Deal, which is something people talk about a lot at the moment. And how we do that is we need to incentivize people, for example, to get into electric cars or to buy electric cars or to buy hybrids. I mean, even on that small scale, there are very good hybrid and electric cars out there.
Mm-hmm. Now, they've done this quite successfully in some Scandinavian countries where they had huge subsidies, of course.
Yes, yes.
I can't envisage that happening here, even though I'd like to see it, but I can't envisage it happening.
I agree. But the honest answer, the quick answer and the quite brutal answer is it absolutely has to happen, because there isn't time for it, if you like, to happen naturally, that people would somehow move from diesel. And don't forget, diesel and petrol cars are cheaper than hybrid and electric cars, so which is why we need to really subsidize it on a huge scale. But politically, that's really difficult. It's proving very difficult, you know, for that to happen. For example, there is a Green New Deal, which is this idea that and it's based on a New Deal from the 1930s and 40s in America, and the idea is you just rebuild the infrastructure on an environmental premise. So stop using petrol and cars almost completely. But this takes a massive. Well, an interesting thing about it. Someone did a feasibility study about it in America, how much that would cost, and they talked about approximately $1.5 trillion over the space of about 30 years. Now, one of the things which was said, and we can't afford that. And I'm only talking about 3 or 4 months ago, and I was teaching at UCC. Within 3 weeks of the coronavirus hitting, $2 trillion was found right away to pump back into the American economy.
Yes.
So in a sense, that kind of puts to the idea that it's not affordable. It's very, very expensive, but it's a matter of priorities, and it's a matter of policies.
And Mark, that brings me to the next question, which you've led on to, which is, obviously we saw with COVID-19, this actually did happen. The whole place ground to a halt.
Yes,
People were in lockdown, so they weren't using their cars and they weren't using petrol. We saw from satellite imagery that the air pollution over places like Italy, which is the industrial heart of Italy, and thus places reduced and almost disappeared. And we also saw, in some sense, the planet getting a reprieve and nature, you know, taking advantage of this little break that they got. But how can we sustain that into the future? I mean, that even this break in the economy, albeit excellent for the planet, has been detrimental for economic activity. How can we keep the two in balance, even though, as you quite rightly pointed out, the political will was there to deal with the crisis when it arose, but why isn't it there for the longer and more problematic existential question about green, you know, and our very existence on the planet? So, anyway,
Yeah, no. I mean, that's that. You've pinpointed the crucial question. I think, you know, perhaps it was COVID-19 is something we could see and hear and even feel about within the space of a few weeks. It was an immediate attack, if you like, or an immediate challenge, which had to be done right away. Whereas climate change is something which has been emerging and unfolding for decades now. Mm-hmm. Even though we're getting in. We're reaching a critical phase within it. There's no quick answer. One of the answers is, even conversations like we're having here at the moment are important because it gets across to people, well, that if COVID-19 is an immediate problem and, you know, there's no vaccine for it as we know it, mm-hmm. at least not yet, there certainly isn't an easy vaccine for climate change. I guess, the way I tend to think about it more and more is I think we need an imaginative leap.
Yes.
And that we need to be able, we need to place ourselves 20, 30 years then. And it's not that it'll be worse in 20, 30 years then, but it'll be worse in 20 or 30 years then. So we can't, I'm not saying we should think of the problem as in 20 or 30 years then, but perhaps we should use our imagination and put ourselves in the footstep of our children in later life and our grandchildren, think, well, they're going to be dealing with something incredibly serious. And then there's a political impact of climate change with more migration because of people leaving environments will be impacted by with climate change mm-hmm. a lot more. So we need to put ourselves in that position and think about what that would be like. And then it's okay. So that's what it's going to be like in 30, 40 years time. What can we do now in order to make sure that that isn't what it will be like? And to go back to what I was saying, we need to decarbonize our industrial process, meaning we need to take fossil fuels out of it. Not the quickest, because there is no quickest way. The best, because we have our economy. We can't just decide to stop our economy. We've seen what's happened the last few weeks, which hopefully won't be too serious in the next few months. But mm-hmm. we can't just decide, well, that's it. We're gonna slow down the economy for the better of the planet, because we need an economy as well, right?
Yes.
And so therefore, I have no intrinsic problem with the idea of economic growth, but I have a problem with it if it's based on fossil fuels, which mm-hmm. are turned into carbon dioxide, greenhouse gases, and
yes.
the planet. We won't have much of a system to work with in 30, 40 years to keep going like this.
I do suspect, Mark, that post-COVID-19, there might be a lot of people using less cars insofar as more people may be able to, at least we now see how it is possible, to work from home. And to work remotely and to work online. And maybe this has been the first phase, in a sense, of us using our cars less.
Yeah, I think so.
Which might be part of, you know, a very complex solution to a very complex problem.
I think it's a great first start. For example, my wife works from home and I work mostly from home. So we've already done that anyway. And mm-hmm. I've only been to UCC a few days a week. But I know quite a few people, and apart from anything else, this kind of habit really of everybody, you know, everybody leaves out, you know, the suburban towns, the commuter towns outside Cork City, everybody heads in a car. I mean, maybe that's the 20th century, right? Maybe we don't need to do that anymore, actually, if you think about it, you know?
Yes.
So maybe we could, even for example, if 20%, 30% of people more started working from home, look at the impact that would have on the use of car journeys alone within Cork. And if you could replicate that across the world, that's a good start. You're right, actually. That would be a really good start in itself. It's not enough, but
it's a good start.
Yeah. I mean, just to give you a quick kind of statistic, which maybe might enlighten us. At the moment, roughly, our global energy system, about 87% is based on carbon, which is coal, petrol, and gas. And the other 13% is renewables like wind, but also nuclear. What we need to do is turn that figure around in the next 20 to 30 years, and that's as soon as we can. So rather than 87% being based on oil, gas, and coal, we need 87% based on electricity, hydrocarbons, and, well, very controversial, but nuclear energy.
Solar.
So that's kind of where we need to go. But we need to this process is ongoing, and we're getting, and there's been a lot of really positive things happening in the last few years. But I think we also need to, well, without going to sound panicky, but we need to move.
Yes.
You know, quickly.
Yes. Yes, and again, I think trying to take the positives out of COVID-19, it may have just leapfrogged us into the 21st century in that respect, and perhaps start that whole process in a more timely way than what we were already travelling.
I think so. But it's about initiatives now, I think, at this point. And I also think I think most people are aware now that climate change is a real thing. And, you know, unfortunately, the last 20 years, there have been elements, shall we say, some extent in the media, not completely, but other places as well. But they've done everything they can to deny the fact that climate change is a real thing. And that, unfortunately, has had a bit of a negative impact on how people perceive what the problem is. But I think that problem's finished. I think the vast majority of people realise it's an issue. So I think, I think you might be right about the COVID-19. I think maybe we're in a point now, and a point maybe in the next even year or so, where people are very receptive to this idea of, well, okay, what can we do? And we can see we don't need to take car journeys, right? Looks like we might not be able to take as many plane journeys as we used to,
which might be no bad thing either.
In terms of another interesting statistic to kind of give you some, if you take, which I have done, I'm sure you've done, and this is not kind of no guilt trip here, but if we take one flight a year, where even if the flight says from Cork to London, that means we're in the top 5% of global emitters of carbon. So it kind of gives you an idea of how serious it is to travel. I mean, I'm flying by, this is not a guilt trip, because I went to talk at a conference about a year ago in the Czech Republic on climate change, and we talked about the irony and the contradiction of us actually flying and talking about it. But perhaps maybe this is the COVID-19, and it's kind of taught us something. Well, maybe we just can't, unless we use a different fuel, which doesn't seem to be kind of
harmful to the environment.
As oil and petrol, that's the problem, you know.
Future conferences, there'll be a lot more Zooming and teams work and all of that going on using different platforms. So, Mark, just to bring us to the end of the interview then, finally, what do you think, your projections for the future? Are you optimistic or not?
No, I'm optimistic, and I'm optimistic as I have to be. Because I've got children, you know, and I need to be optimistic. But I think it's a bit like, you know, someone described it once, it's a bit like a doctor or a physician diagnosing a problem. And if there is a problem, first you have to diagnose it as honestly as you can, because you can't pretend that it's not there, right? You know?
Yes.
So you diagnose the problem, and by diagnosing the problem, that immediately tells you, okay, so what's the answer to this? And then we have to be kind of honest about how we approach that answer. And then we can be positive and say, well, who wouldn't want to live in a world which is greener environmentally, which has got less pollution, which means our houses are based on the idea of not needing this mass insulation, but they're just built well from the beginning. You know, we don't need this insulation in our homes, which is expensive and all the rest. And maybe we don't, you know, we can still fly places, we can still do those things. Or maybe you should think, maybe it's time to start getting on trains and boats. Maybe that's a better way to go about it. But yeah, I am positive about it. But I think what we need to encourage governments to really move in this. And some of them are. I mean, I'm talking to you after Greta Thunberg, who I think is incredible, brilliant, only 16, 17 years old.
Absolutely amazing. Yes.
Incredible. And then all the school strikes, if you want to call them that there. I mean, if you had talked to me 2 years ago, I would say, oh God, I don't feel too confident. But now I actually feel a lot more optimistic, because I think that generation, who are brilliant, anyway, that young generation, they're fabulous.
I agree.
They see that their future, and they are the future, and good luck to them, if I can do.
Well, exactly, Mark. And on that note, I think we'll have to leave it there. And I think that's a very, very positive note to end on.
Yeah,
the future of our planet will be in the hands of the youth. And I'm sure that they seem to be very proactive and will continue to be into the future.
I have great confidence in them. Yeah, really do.
Fantastic. Yeah. So thank you so much, Mark, for taking our call.
Okay.
And it's a great pleasure to speak with you on the climate emergency problem, which is, as we know, an everyday a problem now and something that really has to be tackled with urgency. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
And there you are listening to Mark Kernan, who is a UCC lecturer in the area of development and human rights. And there you are listening to him speak about the climate emergency issue. This interview can be listened to on www.cry104fm.com. Go to podcasts and click on Dr. Rosari Griffin, Presenter Podcasts.